Hi, this is Susie with In His Shoes Ministries welcoming you to our 12th year of broadcasting, The Next Step with Father Vazgen. Since 2008, we have been producing these podcasts on a weekly basis for those who are seeking practical and deeper applications of their faith and spirituality in their lives today. Blending the most ancient traditions of Armenian Orthodoxy with the challenges of the 21st century, Father Vazgen brings a distinctive and unique voice to the Christian conversation of peace, harmony, and love. Armadoxy is a practical approach to melding spirit and passion in the real world. So turn up the volume and get ready to take the next step.
Rest in peace, Kobe Bryant. Just about everywhere you go, you see it. Not only here in America, throughout the world. Rest in peace, Kobe Bryant, a man who had an impact on the world, who inspired, touched people, more than sports. Yeah. This morning I was on my walk. It was early morning. The sun was just about coming up, and big giant bus coming right in front of me. And hardly anybody's on these buses in the morning, but the marquee, huge, right in front, lit up. R.I.P. Kobe. And I thought to myself for a moment, like it just a second, you know, you look at it and you go, R.I.P. Rip. And you really have to be outside of this world not to know what they're talking about. You know, your mind just starts thinking about what's, you know, does everybody know? Absolutely. Yeah, beyond the world of sports, people are talking about him. Everywhere you look, people are memorializing, are remembering him. And then to compound it, we start hearing the stories of that morning. You know, it was interesting because that same morning I was in flight two, and I remember getting to the airport right here in Los Angeles area and thinking, wow, there's some fog on the ground. But it wasn't horrible fog, you know, it was, you could see in front of you. And remember going up through the clouds, and then right above the clouds, of course, beautiful sunshine. And it was right around that time, I guess, that the helicopter had crashed. And tragically, Kobe Bryant, his daughter, Gianna, and seven others, including the pilot who happened to be an Armenian fella, Bobayan, I think was his name, Ara Bobayan. Yeah. Passed. And then to compound it, you start hearing the stories, and especially one that touched us very deeply was that Kobe and his daughter, knowing that they were going to go Sunday morning, had gone to Mass earlier that morning at 7:30. They had attended the 7:30 Mass because they were going to be leaving. And it's just beautiful. You hear this story and you hear about their reflections on God. You start hearing about them and then you start wondering, and faith. How does faith play into all of this? It's the question we certainly ask. But I think for me, one of the questions that came up to me was, it's so beautiful to see the world stop and remember somebody like this. Because after all, he had inspired, he had helped. There was one very moving story that I heard about in the aftermath of, I think it was the same day, Sunday, the accident took place Sunday, and then it was Sunday afternoon. He had established a gym where five different games were taking place with kids who had scholarships, who were enjoying these facilities thanks to Kobe. And they all stopped and took a knee. They all knelt down in groups for prayer. And of course, prayer is the be still and know that I am God moment, right? It's the psalmist saying, be still and know that I am God. At certain times, there are just no words that you can use, especially in the face of such tragedy. Tragedy because it's unexplainable. Tragedy because you realize how precious life is, and perhaps that. And the tragic part is the realization that you aren't exploiting life the way you should be, that it could happen to anyone. And my head went out to the work that we do through In His Shoes. I mean, we see these kind of tragedies. This was beautiful that the world stopped and remembered Kobe, and still in memorials that are going on even right now as we produce this podcast. But you know, there's kids in Syria. There are fathers in Africa. There are fathers right here who get killed and leave children orphaned. And we let the day go by. And certainly somebody like a Kobe Bryant, with all respect towards him, I'm not trying to demean or take away any of the respect, but I'm also trying to engage in a dialogue that we realize that all life is precious. And these are things that remind us that there are tragedies throughout the world. This one was, you know, one of those tragedies that you can chalk up to accident, whether it was pilot error, whether it was the fog, the conditions, mechanical error. You know, at some point they're going to come out with some kind of report and they'll say, this is the reason why it happened. But it doesn't change the reality of where we're at right now. A world where, you know, a true inspiration is gone. And in the same way, when we look at situations in war, when we look at these war-torn countries, we need to start thinking about who are the people on the ground. You know, we talk about big, big items like governments fighting one another. But at the end of the day, these are children. These are people who are being eliminated, who die. And yeah, you can put them up to statistics and you can say that, you know, well, that's a casualty of war and everything. But at the end of the day, they have been an inspiration to somebody. They inspire others. They are the children of parents. They are the husbands and wives of husbands and wives. They are the children of parents, and they are the parents of children. And it's as tragic as it gets for the families that are involved. And so in a sense, here's one more thing that Kobe does. In his passing, he makes us realize how precious that life is, that it can go up in a moment. And it does. It does. It did for him, and it does for others. What's important is to value that life, to play the game. There have been so many different stories, inspirationals, talks, and people interviews. There was one little quote by Kobe that hit me. It says, everything negative, pressure, challenges, is all an opportunity for me to rise. Beautifully said. And it captures who he is, and it captures really what inspires others. I think this is what people need in a world that has this uncertainty. Think about it this way, right? There is this uncertainty of life that by which insurance companies make their billions of dollars. The highest buildings in our cities are insurance companies. Why? Well, yeah, they're the most important. They're the richest. And why? Because they feed off of this idea of uncertainty, not knowing what's going to happen. Think about it, right? When you buy insurance, what are you doing? You are betting that something's going to happen to you. That's what it is. And they're putting up their money that nothing's going to happen to you. So you put up your money and you say that I'm betting that, you know, I'm going to die or I'm going to get into a tragic accident. Here's my money to guarantee that. And they're saying, no, you're not. You're going to be okay. And think about it this way. Who's got the better end of the deal? Where certainly, you know, you want to think that, okay, you're insured. Definitely, that's wonderful. But on the other hand, they're the ones who are making the money. Because they play on this fear. And if you need proof of it, look at their buildings. Look at their cash reserves. Insurance companies, they make money off of this fear. I'm not telling you go sell your insurance. Yes, definitely. We all need to have insurance. I'm one of those guys that, you know, when I rent the car, they say, do you want that extra insurance? Yeah. You know, I'm not saying any, but I'm just asking you to look at the psychology behind it. It's a basic fear that people have. Okay, that being said, what is it that takes away the fear? If not faith. And we appeal to God because we find comfort there. Fear not, for I am with you. Fear not, I am here. The Lord says, do not worry. Do not be anxious. What is that anxiety? What is that anxiousness? That anxiety, it comes from our fear of not knowing. Not knowing. And when incidents like Kobe Bryant, the accident that took place, when these things take place, what happens? Our anxieties are heightened. We realize that at any time this can happen. And that's all I'm saying is that it does happen. It is happening all around us. It takes incidents like this to heighten our awareness, to keep our eyes open, that life is precious. You live the day for the day. You live the moment for the moment. When I read the way Kobe lived, because I got to be honest with you, I knew of him. I wasn't a big follower or anything. Of all the sports game, probably the least one that I know about or have enjoyed has been basketball. I know people love basketball. For me, it's football and baseball, the hockey, you know. But basketball, you know, I think the last time we saw the Harlem Globetrotters of all people. which was a fun one the kids were growing up. But Kobe Bryant, I knew of him. We had heard of him. We didn't live out on an island or in a hermitage. We knew about him and we've seen him. Being here in Los Angeles, definitely part of the Lakers lineup. Yes, we are big Lakers fans here in Los Angeles. Of course we are. Kobe Bryant, household name. And all of a sudden, boom, it's over. And now the layers start developing. We find out, oh, he went to church that morning. What does that mean? He had a faith. How was that faith affecting him? How are the things that he said? How did he live? And then all of a sudden, all of these different elements start coming into play. Not that we didn't know about him. We knew he was always inspiring. We always knew that, yeah, okay, he had these wonderful opportunities for kids, especially underprivileged kids, to find themselves, to define themselves. And now, you know, it starts coming out more and more. And you realize what a beautiful life he did have. Inspiring life he had. And that inspiration doesn't end there because it keeps on inspiring. Even to us today, talking about him. I think when the apostle says, love does not end, I think this is a big factor in that. This is love. His love towards people, the way he lived, the way he shared it, that love does not end. It never ends. It continues. So rest in peace, Kobe Bryant. And I think we'll take a little break right now for the song of the day before I go on appropriately with this elegy. like starry skies, right? Just so beautiful, so beautiful. That is Arno Babajanyan off of the Armenian Rhapsody album, a song called Elegy in commemoration of Aram Khachaturian. And we commemorate, we remember the life of Kobe Bryant. We also remember all those, as I said a few minutes ago, all those who have inspired and people who have left and those starry skies that they light up. I'll have a link on today's show notes to this song. Aram Khachaturian, by the way, I have another story about him as well. I was a student when he passed away. I was a student in Etchmiadzin, 1978. So I was there when the funeral took place. And I don't know what it was. I was a young student. Maybe I was small. I don't remember, but I remember it was huge. I remember the grave area was just this huge, like a field. That was the memory that I have of that. But I do remember I was there during the passing of Aram Khachaturian, the great, great musician, composer. Once again, this was Arno Babajanyan, Elegy in Commemoration of Aram Khachaturian. I have a link on today's show notes. I don't know if some of you got a chance to see the new series that we started called WD-168, a takeoff on WD-40. You know, there's this like lubricant. It is like an oil. It sprays out WD-40. It's said to have also some miraculous powers for healing, especially arthritis and joint pains. I've heard about this, you know, WD-40. But we use WD-40 quite often growing up, and especially when you're bringing up three boys, you know that WD-40 has a place on your shelf. And we thought that, you know, well, we got a WD, the Western Diocese. And we got, we can't take the name 40. How about 168? WD-168. That's what we called it, because God gives us 168 hours throughout the week. We thought we'd take a few minutes out of those hours and share some news stories. And not the typical stories that you're accustomed to see, but rather with a little comment, a tilt towards our church. So if you haven't seen it, do check it out. We did this week's, this is now we're in the second week of production. We did one with the lead off with the Kobe Bryant story. And we talked about this horrible virus, the coronavirus that is hitting the world coming from China. And the need for us not to panic. That's the direction we took that one. But there was also a few other stories that we hit. And a few that I wanted to share with you, especially, I don't know if you got a chance to look at Time Magazine this week. They had a cover story called Youthquake, talking about the next generation in the world, about the young people. It starts off, the 21st century is old enough to have kids of its own. Yeah, can you imagine? We're at 2020. I remember when the world was supposed to end at 2000, right? Now it's 20 years since they scared us. Anxiety. Oh, man, we've been talking about this for a while, right? That's 2020. Yeah, the children of the 21st century already. They're authoring letters. They're protesting. They're there sitting with government officials. Nobel Peace Prize. Nobel Prizes. I mean, it's remarkable when you think about it. And I bring this up because I hear it so often. And unfortunately, I heard it just the other day. I happen to be at a meeting where, again, this issue comes about youth and the church. You've heard it. If you have any, if you've stepped foot in church, you've heard it. Yeah. Where are the youth in the church? And it is a big problem because you certainly, it's something that you believe in and you want to be able to share your faith with the next generation. And the only way that you can is to ensure that the next generation is there. And it's a problem. You know, where are the youth? There you see it. Youth quake, it says. How the world will change when a new generation leads. Yeah, no different than in the church. What are we going to do? And I've heard this throughout my life, 37 years as a priest. I've heard this for the 10 years before that, that I served through the youth groups and served through as a deacon. The question, where are the youth? And I want to just address this because I think what we fail to realize is that the youth in themselves is not a homogenous group, first of all. You, when you say youth, that what are you talking about? Are you talking about kids? Are you talking about adolescents? Are you talking about high schoolers? Are you talking about college kids? And you know, each one of these divisions of youth have their unique set of circumstances. You cannot take an adolescent and put him in the room with a college student who is 18. A 13 and an 18-year-old will have, well, they might have quite a bit more in common than they would say with me, but you can't address them in the same sentence. They each have their own unique set of circumstances, as not only that far off, but the high schooler and the college student. College opens up a totally new world. And so, yes, there is a problem when you compartmentalize them or you lump them all together and say, this is the youth. Okay, that's one. But here's a bigger issue, and I want to really be candid about this because I felt this when I was a young guy and still feel it. Even, yeah, I know, and mentally or emotionally, I still feel young. I know the body betrays that youngness, that youth, but emotionally, you know, mentally, I still feel young. And I feel for young people when people try to put them in, lump them together and try to bring on their values, their experiences, thinking that, you know, we have something unique. I think there's something to be said that people have to make their own mistakes. You certainly don't want your kids to make the same mistakes you do, but you know that they appreciate. They get to understand it a lot more when they go through those routines, those steps. But that's on an individual basis. What I'm talking about is our world. When you look at some of the big issues in our world, particularly instances of war, misunderstanding, prejudice, racism, hatred, you see that. And what are we going to, why are we passing this along to the young people? Do you remember last week when I was sharing with you the statements of Reverend Lawson that he said, we've got to cut out these stories where we glamorize war. It's along those same lines too. What are we giving the young people? What are we giving them? I shared with you briefly in this last Monday, we went into the story of Cain and Abel. And I want to do that in just a couple minutes. Cain and Abel, a classic story. You pass along this story of two brothers, one killing the other because God accepted his offering. And there was this jealousy, so to speak. There was this misunderstanding, and really a misunderstanding on our part too. Like, what is this all about? Is it about meat and vegetarianism? If you don't know the story, it comes to us from Genesis chapter 4, in which there are two brothers, Cain and Abel, and we learn of the first murder, we've been taught, the first murder that takes place. And what's the reason behind it? Well, Cain was a tiller of the soil. He had vegetables, and Abel was a shepherd. Abel gave God an offering of meat. Cain gave an offering of vegetables and fruits. And God said, I'll take the meat. I don't want your offering, Cain. And so Cain, out of jealousy, out of spite, out of anger, kills his brother. The first murder is now documented. And we talked about this at Bible study because I'm on this really big kick right now because I've seen too many lives destroyed, that we've got to stop understanding these stories as literal truths, that there was a guy named Cain, there was a guy named Abel. No, understand it in the context. And that's what we did just a few days ago at our Bible study. What we did is we looked at that story, we read it, and we started asking. Now, here's a story that, you know, if you were to tell it to a group of shepherds, they would probably think, wow, God liked our offering, right? So you have to know to whom this story was being told. Why was it told? What was so bad about that offering that they make? And these are the stories that we pass along. And we pass along to our young generation. And now they have this world, and they're trying to make sense, top from bottoms, side to side. They're trying to make sense of their lives, of their reality, and we complicate it by giving them an extra layer of our reality on top of it. And this is the one point that I've always resented, like the audacity that we have, that we've created something so great that we need to pass it along. And yes, there are a lot of things. I mean, you certainly don't want to go to a life where, you know, tuberculosis was rampant. You don't want to get to a point where polio, I mean, these are things we've eradicated or we've gotten rid of, right? Thanks to the progress we've made. So I'm not talking about these kind of progresses. I'm talking about societal, the way we have evolved as a society in terms of peace, in terms of war. Why can't we cut out the fundamental idea of hatred, the fundamental idea of resolving issues of conflict through violence? And this is nothing that I'm certainly not the first person to think about it. I'm not the last person. But what bothers me is when we give these kind of metaphors and scenarios to our children, it preps them. It gives them the platform from which they jump in to their lives. And it comes with all of this baggage. And so I was very pleased, actually, that I think I told you last week, I'm reading John Steinbeck's East of Eden, and lo and behold, what comes up? They start questioning the story of Cain and Abel. What? Yeah, the same one that I've been questioning for all this time. They're asking this question, okay? What about the story of Cain and Abel? Is it about a farmer versus a shepherd? Is it about God liking meat as opposed to vegetarianism? What is it about? It's the 16 verses in the chapter fourth chapter of Genesis that has been passed on from century to century, from generation to generation, and continues to be a story to discuss jealousy, rejection, acceptance, God's fairness or unfairness, justice or injustice, right? Now I'm going to read to you a small passage from John Steinbeck's East of Eden. I don't know if I told you or not. I'm in the middle of reading this book, East of Eden by John Steinbeck, and it's just fascinating. I'm at that point right now where can't put it down, kind of want to know what the next story is, and let's see. So I'm going to share with you this story, because all of a sudden I'm reading it, and there they are, lo and behold, they're going to discuss Cain and Abel. What? Yeah, the same questions that we have, when there's nothing new under the sun. Same questions like, what was it about God that he accepted one and didn't accept the other? What about the rejection? What about fairness and so on? So, and let me also say, as I'm going to do this, I don't know if things change in the story. I'm not going to give you away the storyline, but I'm not even, let me see, where am I? I'm on page 301, huh? Isn't that like kind of like a nice Armenian number, 301? And there, whoa! Look at that. There are, there's exactly 601 pages in this book. So I am exactly halfway. Wow, I couldn't have planned it better. I'm exactly halfway through this book. So I don't know how it changes, but I do want to read to you this one little section about the Cain and Abel story, because I thought it was fascinating that the writer came up with this explanation of this story. He writes of through the characters, and I'm not going to get into the details of who the characters are. But he says, I think this is the best known story in the world because it is everybody's story. I think it is the symbol story of the human soul. The greatest terror a child can have is that he is not loved, and rejection is the hell he fears. I think everyone in the world, to a large or small extent, has felt rejection. And with rejection comes anger, and with anger, some kind of crime in revenge for the rejection. And with the crime, guilt. And there is the story of mankind. I think if rejection could be amputated, the human would not be what he is. Maybe there would be fewer crazy people. I am sure in myself there would not be many jails. It is all there, the start, the beginning. One child refused the love he craves, kicks the cat, and hides his secret guilt. And another steals so that money will make him loved. And a third conquers the world, and always the guilt and the revenge and more guilt. The human is the only guilty animal. I like that. The only guilty animal. That's, yeah. Okay, continuing. He says, therefore, I think this old and terrible story is important because it is a chart of the soul, the secret, rejected, guilty soul. And then he turns to the character, Mr. Trask. He says, you said you did not want to kill your brother, and then you remembered something. I don't want to know what it was, but was it very far apart from Cain and Abel? Very insightful, right? He's not talking about the story. He's talking about humanity, about the course of humankind. And I appreciate this because when we read these stories, we have to understand that there is so much more to these stories than just two people standing there. I've said this 100 times about the story of Noah's Ark. It's not about this God that just decides, okay, let's go out and kill everybody because nobody's been good. You know, because all of a sudden you're going to be up against the question, the inevitable question, well, you mean there wasn't anybody else good except Noah and his family? And you can't say no because you have to account for the little babies that were born a few days ago. And what sin did they have? What did they do that was so terrible that God's going to say, let's wipe it out? No, it's not about a literal event. It's about understanding God's love and care and his wanting us to be in that communion with him. And these are the stories throughout. I mean, I've said it enough that the Bible is completely 100% true. It's just not factual. And if you can understand that statement, it's not about facts, it's about truth. Then you understand what I'm going to say next. The Bible is one book about God's love for us. An unending love for us. That's it. And I say that's it that way because it's everything. But for most people, what? That's it? Because I know most people want to know about a God who's sitting in judgment and I'm going to be judged properly and the rest of the world won't be judged properly. And I've heard many Bible studies, I've heard many preachers who get on these high horses. They talk about these are the elect, these are the non-elect. These are the chosen, these are the non-chosen. God loves these people, God doesn't love these people. And They get auditoriums. They get arenas filled because people want to hear this kind of message. And the message that we have is a very simple one. It's about love. It's about understanding. It's about understanding that these stories are meant to define, to explain a reality. Like, for instance, when we hear of the condemnation of Adam and Eve, they're expelled from paradise. And what's the condemnation of Eve? In labor shall you give birth, you know? It's not that God just like said, it's not like before that, and I know arguably you're going to say, well, before that nobody was born. Well, come on. But basically, people want to believe that because of that condemnation, this is why women have labor pains. This is why in pain they bear children. Instead of understanding in pain we bear children, and therefore this story has been written for us to understand that there is a reason. 3,000 years ago, somebody said, why are we going through all this pain to bring children into this world? Well, there's a reason. Here it is. It's because you rejected God, and there it is. That's the sentence. Well, try to understand the story of humanity and try to understand what's going on in the world, and you'll have such a more clear understanding of what the Bible has to offer us. And it's the story of God's unending love for us. It's beautiful, you know? Let's not complicate it. You know what? I have a few announcements and a few more things that I want to share with you, but I think I'll do it after Susie's break. Yeah, the piano player comes in and I got to move out of the way. Be back in a couple moments, okay?
Susie here again. Before continuing with today's broadcast, I'd like to take this opportunity to remind you that this podcast is made possible through your prayers and generous donations. Since 2008, we have been providing quality programming through podcasts, educational videos, and streams, using technology's most current resources. The message of Armenian Orthodoxy is giving people an intelligent and practical answer to many of life's difficulties, including the challenge to bring peace to a hurting world. To become part of this dynamic ministry, please take a moment now to visit inhisshoes.org website and press on the donate button. Your encouragement goes a long way. Please accept our heartfelt appreciation. Thanks for listening, and God bless. We now return to this week's Next Step with Father Vazquez.
Thank you, Susie, and thank you to all of our listeners. I was up in Oakland, California this last Sunday and going to be there for a few more weeks on Sundays to celebrate the Divine Liturgy. But I met this woman, just fascinating for me. Fascinating in the sense that, you know, the things that we're doing with this ministry are reaching people where we never, never, never imagined. And this was an elderly lady who approached me, and she says, do you know I pray for you every day? And, you know, I'm thinking, okay, maybe she's just giving me a line or anything. But she teared up, and she says, every day I pray for you, and I want to thank you. Because, you know, your CD, The Focused Vision, she says, people have given me all kinds of recordings of the Divine Liturgy and beautiful choirs, and there's no question about it. But this little CD, you know, in 15, 20 minutes, I get my dose of the Divine Liturgy every day. And I pray for you, and I want to thank you. And, you know, really the thanks is mine. Jeez, what a beautiful statement that is. I mean, keep you going, right? And I appreciate just all the places, all the wishes that you have, but I'm just appreciate the power of this ministry to be able to reach out in places we never thought. And now the newest one is WD-168. I'm kind of excited about it. It started off in a way that I didn't think that I was going to have this much fun with it. But we've already recorded two episodes, and I'm getting ready for the next ones. It's basically the news with a little bit of commentary, and all in 5 minutes. And I'm sure you've heard that statement about sermons, you know. It's easier to write a one-hour sermon than a five-minute sermon. You know, to write a five-minute sermon, you may need 5 hours. Whereas to write a one-hour sermon, you may need 5 minutes. Because to be able to be concise, eloquent, requires that you put it together and you organize the thoughts in a rational manner. And that's what this thing is doing. It's almost like the WD-168 is almost like a Twitter for news. You know, like, boom, let's get it out. And I would love to hear from you how you like it. I'll put a link on today's show notes if you haven't caught it. It's on the Western Diocese YouTube page. It's on their Facebook page. And it's been getting around. It's going viral. And I'm very thankful for all the comments and the links that people are sharing with it. So do check that one out. WD-168. Yeah. Exciting new program that we're doing. As I said, I'm in Oakland for the next few weeks on Sundays. If you happen to be up in the Bay Area, do stop and say hello. With that, I'm going to leave some of these other topics for next week. There's so much going on and so much I want to share with you. But I want to thank you for joining us today. I hope you enjoyed today's show as much as we enjoyed producing it for you. On behalf of the wonderful crew who put today's show together, please check us out throughout the week on all the socials and at inhisshoes.org. And we look forward to having you join us next week as we take the next step.
And now here's the fine print. The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskullness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of epostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
I want to live it.